bigger than Motown, a Sony, or Warner Brothers.
Death Row's gonna be the biggest record company there is.
Hey, nigga, why you fucking with me?
Fuck you, nigga, cause I can.
Oh. Next year, Death Row gonna start putting out all money.
The very first year, I generated $150 million.
The more money we made, the bigger that we got. It became more dangerous.
It was just a blood nation.
Drama, we gonna definitely bring it like only Death Row is ready.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kinda hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky ass shit like
that ass once again.
Death Row Records was the most controversial hip-hop record label up to date in the five decades of hip-hop. The Death Row story is based upon a lifestyle that set the tone for gangster rap in the 90s, which significantly changed the course of American music history. The Nation of Podcation has woven the tale of intense drama that paved the way for some of the world's biggest stars, including Tupac Shakur, Dr. Dre, and Snoop Dogg. The Death Row record story details the visionary entrepreneur life story of Suge Knight, encompassing the rise to the top of the charts after partnering with Dr. Dre to found Death Row Records. We tell you where Suge intended to take hip-hop in the new millennium and feature insightful interviews with business associates, family members, and artists who speak candidly about Death Row Records. Andre Young, better known as Dr. Dre, started DJing in the mid-1980s, which led to him joining the world-class Wrecking Crew in 1985. The first hit with them was Surgery, which sold 50,000 copies in the Compton area.
Dre started getting in trouble. He was going to jail for warrants on a regular basis.
Easy got him out of jail.
When Eric got him out of jail,
then they hooked up and was boys ever since then.
You put the dot on your target, then you blow the shit out the motherfucker. No joke.
When these two became friends, we get the birth of the most iconic hip-hop group of all time, N.W.A.
Police coming straight from the underground. A young got it bad because I'm brown.
Young black males is a target right now. It's open season. It ain't rabbit season or duck season. It's young black males season. That's what it is right now.
Everybody in the ghetto was starving. The streets were starving. So when rap came along, that was a new drug, but it was legal.
When we started NWA, it was just to sell a few records out of the trunk and make some money. We didn't start hip-hop music. We just got it popular.
That's the way it goes in the city of Compton, boy.
Marion Suge Knight from Compton, a former college standout football player from UNLV with an admiration for the street life, who turned bodyguard with an aspiration of something greater.
Growing up in Compton, you was against the odds every day. I couldn't keep playing football, but I knew what direction I wanted to go. I chose to be my own boss and get into the music business. Bobby Brown wanted to go on tour, on my prerogative tour. But he owed some guys some money, and they had a contract on Bobby. They was out to kill Bobby. So we're not going to be able to tour because Bobby's scared of these guys trying to kill him. So I confronted the guys, I dealt with the guys, and I was aggressive. And made that guy apologize to Bobby. So the word traveled around that, you know, I was a stand-up guy.
When I was on the road, I seen like everybody getting fucked. I seen guys come up and be like, man, I got this hit song, and they get a demo to an artist or the manager. All of a sudden, somebody else is singing that song, and they not getting no credits. Or they sold it to him for $1,000, and it was worth $500,000. When I first called these motherfuckers about my bread, they basically told me, fuck me.
When you called, Vanilla Ice,
I'm trying to get at them, like, okay, we did.
I did all of his songs at his kitchen table at his house. Me and Quake would do tracks, and I would go to his house and write, give him songs, and he would learn them.
Got named Mario, but I gave a nigga named chocolate.
Who is Mario Lavelle Johnson? His name is listed.
That's the guy that Suge Knight brought over there that is an acquaintance of mine that had nothing to do with that song.
And you signed over the rights?
Signed over the rights to him so that Suge and them could get paid for it.
So Mario Lavelle Johnson didn't write that song?
No way. Suge roughed one of my bodyguards up. They roughed everybody else and my whole entourage up. Suge took me out on the balcony, started talking to me personally.
On the balcony?
On the balcony.
High above?
Like 15 floors. He had me look over the edge, show me how high I was up there.
Were you scared?
I needed to wear a diaper on that day. I was very scared.
How much were those points worth?
$3 to $4 million.
It was times where, you know, you had to get your hands dirty on that road.
Pull my ponytail down to his lap and reach behind the seat, and all I could hear is this crunch, crunch, crunch. I'm like, did you just really cut my hair?
I worked at Ruthless, and Jerry Heller, who's my cousin, and Suge started coming to the studio where we were recording. The next thing we know, Dre is speaking to Easy Les.
Dre wanted me to go through his contracts. So I wanted to talk to Jerry and him. I said, listen, anything he signs, he entitled to have a copy of it. They kept telling Dre he cannot get his contract.
He got the title because, you know, we niggas, ignorant brothers out here trying to make a dollar, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but how ignorant is N.W.A.? Come on, G, your album went to number one. You got a billboard on Sunset Boulevard. What's up with all that, man?
Don't mean nothing until you get them dollars.
I was managing Andre. Andre was getting one penny per record.
Dr. Dre.
Yeah. And their contract was the worst piece of shit contract ever in the world.
And what's the manager's name? Jerry Heller?
Jerry Heller.
Wasn't that supposed to be Easy's company?
It was Easy company. So Jerry would take 20% off the top, and he added himself as a group member.
A group member to N.W.A.
Yeah. And the management commission on everybody.
Instead of Dre being there, Suge Knight was there, and guys in black jackets with lead pipes and baseball bats, and forced him under threat of his life and telling him that they would kill his mother and that they were holding me hostage, under those kinds of duress, got him to sign releases for Dr. Dre. You know, he probably cost me personally $25 or $30 million, you know?
Easy said, like, y'all came with them at bats, you know what I'm saying?
Nah, man.
Swinging and all that old thing, you know what I'm saying? Nah, Dr. Dre came that way at Easy, you know what I'm saying? Is that the way you got in the
I don't know what he's talking about.
The only thing I want to do is live my life, make my money, make the money I'm supposed to make.
Dre and Doc, they were broke. I mean, even the little money they got wasn't a lot. I mean, Dre had a mansion in Calabasas that was empty.
With the help of others, Dre... So right now we're getting everything back together and we finna come out, you know, fully loaded.
There was always the gang undertone because of the Easy's Crip affiliation and Suge's blood affiliation.
So with this newfound partnership, Dr. Dre was able to get away from Ruthless Records.
The initial understanding was that Doc and Dre and Dick and Suge would be partners in this company.
Each one of the artists thought it was at the beginning. I got a lot of love for, and they always will be a part of the family. On the strength that they took that chance. It's not like they just, we had a name out there. It's not like we had a lot of money to give them. The money I gave came out of my pocket.
The only way I control everybody getting great deals and getting taken care of and getting the opportunity is to start a record label. But at the same time, I still have to give a lot of credit to a guy named Dick Griffey.
You ready? Hi, my name is David Kenner, and I'm the attorney for Death Row and its artists and principals.
They reach a point where they need a financial partner. Through his attorney, David Kenner, Suge is put in touch with Michael Harris, a.k.a. Harry O.
Michael Harris was a major drug dealer.
This is Michael Harris, a man drug agents describe as a major cocaine trafficker. At the young age of 26, he had already made millions of dollars. These are his roots, the streets of South Central Los Angeles, where he started pushing dope on street corners and hung with a blood street gang called the Bounty Hunters. In the drug world, he is known as Herio. Harris built an organization that distributed cocaine in California, Arizona, Texas, Michigan, Illinois, Iowa, Indiana, Missouri, Louisiana, Florida, and New York. Investigators say he dealt so much cocaine, major Colombian drug kingpins like Mario Villabona were obliged to deal directly with Harris. But like a mob godfather, Harris sought to legitimize his illicit fortune and gain Beverly Hills respectability.
Chief, the massive task of getting me out of prison, it took not just money, but power and the proper timing. At some point, we talked about getting into the entertainment business. A young man by the name of Eric had told me about Shug's background and that Shug was aware of my background and that he was somewhat intrigued behind my past and he had wanted to hook up with me in some form or fashion. Kenner brought Shug in to see me due to my request. After being told that Shug was involved with Dr. Dre, we decided to set up a company. I put up, you know, $1.5 million investment until I brought Death Row into the equation. On paper, as a company, there was no Death Row. I actually set up GF Entertainment as a parent company and made Death Row a subsidiary. And so there was 100% ownership through my trust.
The name Death Row, who came up with it?
I did. Over the years, a lot of people started saying, oh, I started. But no, I started it because of my situation.
I feel in the future, Death Row can be a Sony or Atlantic or Warner Brothers. But first step, you know, you got to get people to know Death Row.
We would actually do the invitations in a subpoena form. You know, it's kind of like an inside joke based on my situation.
It was like a dream to have a black-owned label. Like, what is a black-owned label? It just didn't exist before it should.
Death Row is going to be the label of the future. Death Row is an artist label where the artist is always right in a situation where we give a home and have open arms to artists.
Suge's master plan was to have the most talented roster of artists and to become the biggest record label on the planet.
Death Row Records. The label started with Dr. Dre, who was going to do his own thing, and with a lot of help from Suge Knight and Harry O and a number of people, and we got it all together.
Next time on Death Row Records, The Legacy.
Deep Cover.
The introduction of Dre as a solo artist.
I'm on a mission and my mission won't stop.
It was the introduction of Dre as a mentor to other artists, in this case, Snoop Doggy Dogg.
187 on an undercover.
No, man, I understand you guys are working on your album right now.
Yeah, Doggy style. Would it be out in June? You know what I'm saying? It's something like Dre's album. Dre's album was Chronic. This shit right here finna be the Dr. Bombay, don't we?
Bigger than Motown or Sony. Our Warner Brothers.
Death Row's gonna be the biggest record company there is.
Hey, nigga, why you fucking with me?
Fuck you, nigga, cause I can.
Oh. Next year, Death Row gonna start putting out whole money.
The very first year, I generated $150 million.
The more money we made, the bigger that we got. It became more dangerous.
It was just a blood nation.
Drama, we gonna definitely bring it like only Death Row is ready.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kinda hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky ass shit like every-